people that you're don't know about, mm-hmm. and we couldn't get it without the loggers doing their job.
Mm-hmm. One question: do the white guys tend to give you a harder time than the black guys?
No.
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 I
don't treat none of the guys. We have ladies out there working with us too. I'll treat them equal, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I just wondered if they give you a hard time.
No. If they give me such a hard time, I know where to send them at.
She's the boss.
She's got one over the over her. So.
We bypass the big ball. We send them on down the road. You know. If they give me a hard time on the yard, yeah, I say, well, I don't need to see them. Find another job.
You got to call?
No, ma'am. I told you it was just there that I got into this and work. And I went to 12th grade school, and that was it. But I got in the wood industry by there and kind of liked it, and I've been here ever since.
Experience, no education.
That's right. I only been here 5 years, going on six, but I learned a lot of stuff in a year. Yes, ma'am. I live 3 miles down the road. I love it. I wouldn't trade White Spring in for New York no time.
Okay. Thank you all very much. We'll take a few minutes break, and then we're going to come back with Mrs. Baxley and both of her sons and talk some more about the family business part of this this work. A little piece of time, about a half an hour. We'll be talking with three members of the Baxley family. Some of you have already been here and been introduced to Mrs. Lejeune Baxley in the middle. And then her sons. Close to me here is Danny, and on the far side are Tony Baxley. One of the things that we discovered when we started going out into North Florida and talking to people about their experiences working in the timber industry is that it very often there are family connections going on, that family members work with other family members, or often that the son will follow his father into the same line of work in a mill, in a logging operation, and also that the families will work together and own their own businesses. The family orientation was true in plenty of other situations too, in grocery stores and that sort of thing, that, you know, working with the loggers and the forestry people. But these were the folks that we got to come and tell you about their experience of running a family logging operation. Lejeune, you just told us before, but why don't we start with you again and get you to talk a little bit about how it works working with your family and how you ended up with a particular setup that you've got now with two different operations underneath one heading.
Well, my husband passed away in 83, and I had been working with him since 1954. And he had always told me, when something happens to me, you sell everything. The two boys had been working with us. This one had been there 8 years. This one had been there 6 years. But, Mom, what are we going to do? And I said, I don't know. I said, it's not a gold mine. I said, it's out here for us to make a living with, but we've got to work hard to do it. And they said, okay, we will continue, Mama, but one thing, we don't want you doing anything. I thought, we will do all of the work, and you just sit back and tell us when we need you to. So I said, okay, which they're doing a pretty good job of that, except they still try to rope me into everything. And
works too.
So that's the way we started out, and I had both boys in one operation, which was my chipping operation, because we had logged before then we quit the log, and Georgia Pacific wanted us to experiment and start a chipping operation, which was very expensive, and we was dumb enough to stick our neck out and do it, which we have made a good living at. So we couldn't have two bosses in one wood, so I had some extra equipment setting up, needed a little more to go with it, so we started a logging operation. This one runs a chipping operation, this one runs a logging operation. And I keep them from fighting.
Tony, maybe not everybody here knows what chipping means in a log business. Can you tell about that?
Well, we make clean chips and fuel wood chips. That GP uses fire to burners or boilers there at Palaka and generate electricity to keep from buying bunker seed oil. And fuel wood is what we call trash wood, or what a logger would leave, or or small hardwoods after they go in and take down the pines and everything, instead of them having to come in and bulldoze it all up to replant it, is we go back in and just clear everything off, and then they don't have to do any site prep or anything. They just come back right on back in and plant right behind us. And after they use it to burn there at the boilers in Palatka, they turn around and carry it over to Romeo, Florida, and to Husky Charcoal and make charcoal out of the ashes. So.
What kind of machines do you use? Would you explain about that? What actually happens when you chip trees? I didn't believe this till I saw it.
It's a whole tree chipper. Morbark makes it, the one we've got. And it takes up to a 22-inch tree, 22 inches in diameter, limbs and everything. It's 700 horsepower Cummins on it. And all of our other equipment is basically the same thing you use on a logging job, you know, fettle busters and skidders and all that. But this is just one big machine. You just stick the tree in it, pick it up with a knuckle boom loader, and stick the tree in it, and it just grinds it all up. Say, like, that little oak right there, or not that pine, but that one standing on the other side of it, you can just stick that tree in, cut it down, stick the whole tree in, and it just takes it all at one time. Tops, limbs, everything.
Comes out in a chip about this size, 7/8 of an inch.
7/8 of an inch long and about, eighth of an inch thick.
Okay. So. Danny, tell them about your side of the operation. I know you like this better.
Well, I run the logging crew, and basically we make three separations. We have pine, pulpwood, and chip and saw, and ply logs.
The Can you tell them what those are? I didn't understand about that. What's the differentiation?
Okay. The pulpwood, they debark and chip up to make paper products, toilet paper and bags and cardboard and tissue paper, things like that. The chip and saw is basically a 10-inch DBH tree diameter breast high, 6-inch top. They debark and saw lumber out of 2x4s, 1x4s, 2x6s, things like that. Then the ply logs or veneer log, they cut it to an 8-foot, 8-inch length, debark it, and they peel it and make plywood out of it. Glue it together and make plywood.
Goes on a big lathe.
If I just walked up and picked a tree, any tree, how would you know what to use it for? What's the?
Well, it depended on the size of it.
Is it the size around? Is
right,
the
diameter.
Part?
The diameter of it is what we go by.
So how come you got the logging part? Why do you like that?
Well, I've always liked the logging better.
What's the good part about logging?
Well, I like to see the logs on the truck. I like to see the big, pretty timber and the long logs. And with logs, you got more than one mill to haul to, where chips, Tony's basically got one mill to haul to, but he don't have the holdup like we do with logs. He has a quicker turnaround time at the mill. But a lot of times, if they get full of fuel chips and they have to move and get on clean wood or something like that, where they cut us off on putt wood, we can keep on finishing out the week hauling chip and saw or ply logs or something.
Tony, you like the other side of the business. What attracts you to doing that part, the chipping rather than the...
I like doing all that sorting and having all that wood laying on the ramp. We ain't got a load of nothing. I like to stick it in there and make little pieces out of it and then go to the mill. Yeah. Yeah, once it goes through that chipper, they don't know what size it was.
And the good part about it, Tom, it was a challenge to him. We were the first in Florida to have a chipping operation.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We're the only chipping operation Jordan Sifford's got to. In Florida.
Uh-huh. Why did they choose you? Do you have any idea? How did that happen?
I don't know.
Because they didn't think we had any more sense than to stick our neck out and try it.
We'd been in the business a long time, and Daddy was good friends with...
We had a good relationship with GP at the time.
Yeah.
Right.
And they just, you know, come to us and talk to us about it and knew that we wanted to try something different, and we told them we did. And we almost didn't make it there for a while when we first started it.
Was it not as lucrative? Could you make as much money doing it? What?
Oh yeah, but we'd never done it before. We never had a chipper before. We had a lot of problems at the time.
Had a lot to
learn. You
know,
with it and moving from timber the size of what's standing out here to stuff this big around, it was a 6-year-old burn, pine plantation burn on a wildfire over there in Bunnell whenever we started it. It wasn't much taller than this bar right here.
That's right.
And you got machines that you normally used to cutting this size timber with, and you started cutting stuff like the size of that pole there and a little bit bigger. And it was just a complete change about, and like messed up there for a little while till we got on our feet.
Especially after you had just paid $200,000 for a machine to run them little pieces through, and you thought, how am I going to pay for this now?
Mm-hmm. That's something. Tell them about that. I mean, how much did we figure that out finally? How much money you must have invested in equipment? Just your family.
You'd make a lot more money if you had it at the bank than you would out there in the woods, I tell you that.
The machinery, you all have ones that are something like some of these huge ones that are back here. How much?
Yeah, like that one sitting behind that truck there. We got, yeah, they're similar to that, except John Deere makes one. We got six of those.
Six of them.
How much does one of those cost?
$96,000.
How do you manage that?
Work like hell.
Is that Lou Jean's department?
And just hope the good Lord will be good to us so we can make payments.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Three
always
or four
glad
of them.
To see me come in. I set my glycerin tablets on the desk when I walk in. He'll say, what now?
What happens when you need to make a big decision, like buying a piece of equipment or something?
We do a lot of talking.
Well, on a new piece, usually about every, when you buy one now, you know, and you work it hard, in 5 years, usually you got to get another one anyway. You just got it paid for in three or four.
Mm-hmm.
So you really ain't realizing, you know, nothing out of it, really.
It's like trading cars.
That's right.
We always had been able to keep them 3 years, you know, and then trade. But now the insurance and the financing and everything is so expensive until we're trying to work it out to where we can make one last 4 and 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's been had in 5 years.
Oh.
If you run it hard.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of maintenance on ours and grease them regular and
keep them clean.
Keep them up better. And machines made better than what they used to be, too. And I don't believe we have any problem.
We got a hot portable pressure washer and a hot water pressure washer at our shop, so we try to keep them clean and looking good and maintain them good where they last longer.
Yeah, and reduce fire hazards. Fire insurance is terrible.
Why the fire, the machines themselves would catch fire? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because you got so much trash build up on them and the heat out there working them. And a lot of people that fly by night, people that's been in and out of the business, they'll buy a bunch of equipment, can't pay for it, and they turn around and stick a match to it, collect the insurance, get out from under. Well, it makes insurance on all of us go up.
On honest people, it hurts bad.
Mm-hmm. If you got a $100,000 fellow buncher, it costs you $6,000 a year for fire insurance. That's just fire insurance. No vandalism, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
And a fellow buncher usually runs about $100,000 to $120,000.
That's amazing. Does anybody out there have questions to ask the Baxleys here? You go ahead. You. Questions so far.
I have my daughter is my secretary now, and her husband is our maintenance man. So I used to do all of that, plus go to the woods every day and pick pine cones while I was out there, while Danny was motorcycle racing. It took the money for him to race with. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any wasted time. Then I had dinner to fix at night, all the washing to do, and my book work to do.
And six children at home.
It wasn't as thick. Heavy book work back then when I done all of that as it is now, so that's why I hired the daughter.
Plus, we have a CPA too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think about getting out and getting into a different line of work?
Don't know what else to do. We was raised in
it.
Our daddies was in it, his daddy and his daddy before him. So
that's all we know how to do.
We're fourth or fifth generation of this, I reckon you say.
It wasn't our fault. We tried to get them to do something else and never start it, see. No, we want to be a logger, Mama. Okay. I'm talking about the little tiny sand pine cones.
Sand pine cones. See, the government down there buys them from public. You go out there and pick them, like, right behind us where we're working. And they buy them, send them up to Carolinas. They bake the seed out and treat the seed and bring it back down to replant it.
And if you got a good, strong back and you're fast, it's good money in it.
Yeah, it is. They pay cash money.
$100 a week. And it was cash money, no tax.
Uh-huh.
Well, I tried to get a lot of people to help me, and after that first day, I never saw them anymore. Because when I tell them what I made, they was all, you know, oh, boy, this is good money, you know. But I never saw them the second day. I don't know what happened.
My stepdad yeah. Right there, he tried it one time. He's retired, and he went out there one time, was going to try it, and he done it for a little while, and he'd look over there at Mama. Mama be toting another bucket full over there, and he looked down at his bucket. He still ain't got it full yet. And look over yonder at Mama. She done toted another over yonder. He said, the heck with this. It wasn't nothing for him.
I can't even make minimum wage doing this. He said, I'm not doing this. You pick all you want. Because you try it sometime. You run up with a tree that's got some cones on it, and you try pulling them off. They're very hard to get off.
Yeah, that's the same thing.
It's a knack to it, I tell you.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people try it with clippers and...
Yeah.
All kind of other ways, but they don't work out too good like that. Yeah, best thing to do is break them off.
It was funny. They were a lot of men come out there with these little hand clippers, you know, like you trim bushes with, and they was going to stand there and cut them off. I said, how many buckets y'all got? Y'all just going to get that one bucket today? For, I mean, a lot of times, if the cones were good, I could pick, I'd say anywhere from 10 to 12 buckets a day.
Yeah, but no, Mama, you had some help there. All of us skidder drivers was hauling loaded sacks to
Mama,
back.
Mama had a little advantage there.
When Mama needed an empty sack, she'd do like this right here, and we'd bring her a sack, see? And everybody, when she got one full, she'd wave us over there, and we'd haul them out for her. See where all them other people, they had to tote them out by hand.
You better not run over one. You run over one of them sacks and bust it open, you're in a heap of trouble, buddy. More than you want to do.
You went to bed that night without no supper.
So.
Usually from about 5:30 every morning till about 6 or 7 every night, 5 days a week. Well, we work 5 days a week in the woods, and then Saturday is maintenance, and it's usually 4 or 5 o'clock before we finish up on Saturday. So we put in quite a few hours. Yeah. We don't want to even talk about logging on Sunday.
Anything nope. That you work on Sunday is going to break down Monday. It's never fail with
we
us.
We try that off and on, and if you push it and you got to do something on Sunday like that, usually somewhere next week you're going to lose it. That's the way it's always worked for us. You didn't help yourself, and next week you lost that much or more. So you're better off just let it go.
What you didn't get done, you done it Monday morning.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's year round.
Anybody?
See, they usually end at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and then they have to stop at the house because the office is in my house, and then the shops are behind the house, and they always have to stop in to raid the refrigerator. So it's 7 o'clock before they get home at night.
Very few.
We don't run across that, man.
I killed. I think I killed 2 last year.
We killed 4.
I had one of them. I had one of them mounted, and I scare people with it. He's about almost 6 foot long and about that big around, and he's in a coil. Every time.
We had our cousin, matter of fact, he's around here somewhere. He had a man get bit this week. He's digging trash off the machine, walking around the machine, and seen the snake, but he didn't know the snake strike so fast, he didn't even know he'd hit him. And he went on back to work, and he barely nicked his hand, and his hand started stinging. And got to figuring that must have been what had happened, looked down, it was bleeding, you know, scratched up, and they carried him to the hospital. And I said, just luckily it wasn't a good, strong bite, you know, I mean, didn't get a good hit on him. But boy, back to work next day.
Yellow jacket nests is our worst problem in the woods, far as hazardous stuff. Yellow jacket nests is, sometimes we'll move into a block of timber and we might run up with 10 nests, you know, especially out in Ocala National Forest.
They're terrible out there.
Yellow jackets is our worst problem.
Honeybees. Gators, you see a few of them, but Daddy used to deal more with them back whenever he was first starting and whenever we was young and working in the swamps and all. But they used to see them all the time there.
They had one 13 foot long. He was working this one cypress pond, big old sow gator, and she would never leave him alone, you know, always after him in that pond. I reckon she had little ones in there or something. Finally, my cousin, him and Daddy was in partners then, and he run a crawler machine, like what's on the back of that truck there, run it up on top of him, and Daddy wrapped the cable around him, and they drug him out the hill and knocked him in the head with an axe. He was 13 feet. Well, he didn't eat them back then, but I do now. Oh, yeah.
Hornet's nest, snakes.
Anybody else have questions?
Yeah, we never let one man in the woods. But a lot of people do that, but we don't let one man be in the woods at no time by himself. You know, even if he is running a piece of machinery. Because there's always chance, well... Same bunch I was talking about my cousins. He's running a piece of machinery like that skidder sitting right back there, and had a, because you know, you run over small bushes and stuff, you all the time got stuff flying up, or he had a stick come in and stuck him right there and went almost right through the meat of his arm right there, and pinned him in, and had other guys stick fly around and pin him up in the cab, you know, and it's too easy to get hurt, you know, and man could stay out there for, you know, 2 or 3 days, or if nobody come check on him, you know, if he's hung up in there ain't no way to get out, you know.
Do you have radios on your equipment?
Not on equipment, not in on the trucks. Equipment. In the trucks.
We have two-way radios in our pickups, and then we have CB radios in all of our haul trucks.
Well, if something happens, and I got a telephone of mine now, and you know, we can get an ambulance if we need it, or a lot of times I've had people cut with chainsaws several times, and call a emergency room or call a base, and have the base call the emergency room, tell me, you know, that I'm coming, what time I'll be there, and what to expect whenever I do get there, you know, because it, you know, chainsaw don't play nothing with a pair of shoes, it just goes right on through there like it ain't nothing.
One thing, we are very careful with all of our men, and we probably have the lowest rate of workman's comp on account of our safety, which we're very proud of.
Usually our accidents are minor, you know, trash in the eyes, and once in a while we get somebody cut, but, you know, here a few years ago it was even worse, but we don't hardly have any men on the ground anymore. It's all on equipment.
Well, you have your workman's comp go down, too. Y'all get a rebate on it if you don't use it?
No, I wish we did. They started talking all that, but we still ain't seen no money yet.
They're talking about it a lot now, because you got a lot of good loggers out there that have good equipment, and there's chainsaw men wear safety chaps and hard hats and goggles and things like that, and they don't have no accidents. And you got these guys out there that they don't wear no safety stuff, they don't train them in safety, and they getting hurt all the time. And these guys are what's causing the good loggers to have to pay the
exactly.
Right.
Well, that's what they tell us, is that we've had a loss ratio in your area, you know, and that's why you might have, but, you know, he don't work for us, you know.
What they need to do is review each logger's insurance report, accident report for that year, and then let him pay his workman's comp rate by his accident rate.
Yes, sir.
That's the way it should be done. That way everybody would be fair.
I believe that.
What's
the most, what's
the one injury that you have the most done in the loop? Yeah. It used to be chainsaws, but...
Not anymore.
They
all wear chaps now. See, safety chaps.
I've seen those chaps, and those work, buddy.
It is the highest.
I'm
in a
painting
business, and it's a high risk.
Yeah. They had
for every $100 payroll, it cost $29 for workers' comp.
I think it was Parade magazine here in the Sunday newspaper a few months back. And they had a job rate in their accidental rate of it, you know, and logging was the highest risk. Yeah. Always need to be careful out there.
My experience with logging, I used to go deer hunting up in Maine, and it's about 100 square miles up there. I used to go. You went in there, logging companies leased the land. You went in there, you got convicted, paid a fee, you told them on the map what grid you're going to be in. You didn't come out. Get on those logging trails, and them loggers bringing the logs out. They're French Canadian, and
And they're on the CV speaking French. When you can hear them real loud on the CV, you got off the trail.
Okay. I hate to cut us off in the middle of a discussion, but we've got some musicians coming on up. Thank you very much to the Baxleys. We'll be back with you in a few minutes.